Hello, and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today I'm in conversation with UK-based aviation journalist Bernie Baldwin. Bernie, hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Sweltering. It is high summer here in central France, and I hear it's roughly similar in the UK.
It is sweltering in London as well. You get the extra heat from the metropolis to add to the sunshine, but it's all fine. But delighted to join you.
Yes, well, hey, at least it wasn't like this when we were at Farnborough, which is the topic of our show this week. We are talking about the passenger experience news from the Farnborough Air Show. With everything from new CRJ cabins to a new life for the A380, it was a great show for passenger experience this year. But first, thanks to our sponsor, In Conversation is brought to you by Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. As you draw the latch for your tray table, consider the texture and form of the tray, shaped specifically for your in-flight service convenience. That's Bolteron. Learn more at boltaron.com. Now, Bernie, welcome to the podcast. It was fab to see you at Farnborough this month. How do you find the show?
It was really great for me because it was good to be back in the thick of it. Having gone freelance in February last year, I didn't manage to get a commission for Paris 2017, but with Farnborough a short train ride away, I wasn't going to miss out this year, and I did get some writing in one of the dailies, so it all made it worthwhile. And I was impressed by the organisation of the event. I think they're just getting better and better. In a sense, the passenger experience for the show was better, with a new permanent hall, including the media centre there. So the organisers have done really well. But the thing is, of course, that they've now got to get, if they want, the big players from the commercial aviation OEMs back into those conference rooms, because they were nearly all holding their briefings in their own media chalets and pavilions across the site, which, it keeps us fit. But, the situation with the new hall, I'm sure they will speak to people like that. But hey, it was a much better event than previous years, and organisation is going really well there, I'd say.
Yeah, well, and it didn't flood, which was a great improvement on Farnborough 2016.
Only we sweat.
So let's kick off as we both started the show on the Embraer E190E2, the next generation regional jet. What did you think of our hour plus joyride around the rather sun drenched English coast?
Well, the views are fantastic, but in terms of the aircraft, I did have the pleasure of being on the first revenue flight at the end of April, but I wanted to take as you and I know, we take any opportunity to get in the air on an aircraft like that that's still brand new, really. And the interior, no middle seat, of course. We know the E-Jet series, it's still sticking by that. They've got the newer seats, which I found really comfortable. I'm sure I could do 3.5 to 4 hours in one of those, no problem at all. And I've got pretty long legs. I'm one of those shorter body, longer legs. And the seat pitch at 30 even was really nice, and I would have been very comfortable for that for quite some time.
Absolutely. I mean, I ended up flying a fair number of sort of current generation E1 E-Jets around Europe. If I'm heading into London City, it's almost always an E-Jet these days.
Yeah.
And some of those, you know, I'm thinking particularly of the ones operated by Helvetic for Swiss. Mm-hmm. That's got some relatively tight pitch on there. And that can be a bit of a squeeze. But at the same pitch, these new seats from Zodiac Aerospace's regional arm are very comfortable. And of course, as you say, it's that 2-2 configuration, which is great. And they're wider seats, you know, these are sort of approaching 18 inches in width. The cabin, the elbow room happens in the right place in the cabin, so you can get your elbows and your shoulders in against the sidewall. It's a really comfortable ride. And of course, with nice big windows, which
Absolutely.
Give you that sense of space, which is so important.
Well,
half the battle's in the mind there.
Yeah, you said it was, what a lovely morning we had to fly, and the natural light is just so lovely to be in, and like you say, the windows just let all that in, and it makes it a very pleasant experience for the passenger. One of the other things I noticed, though, and of course Embraer pushed this, is the bins, the luggage bins, and it was interesting that they had one of those filled with three roller bags with their wheels in first, and I can actually report that I remember the Widerøe cabin crew are now telling passengers on their aircraft that they can put their roller bags in wheels first rather than sideways. Here's a change, but they have to remind them because they weren't used to it on the Q400s.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real change, and it's a real positive change.
Absolutely.
I've banged on about the overhead bin problem for ages because the things that passengers bring on board just don't match what space is available. So you end up having to gate check, and of course, if a ground crew isn't up to isn't on the ball, then you end up with all sorts of messes on the tarmac as people are leaning out of the plane telling you to gate check your bag. And so it's great to be able to do that. We'll be coming back to bins quite a bit this time round. For those of you who are bin aficionados, fear not. There are much more bin news to come. But in addition to the bins, what I really liked is that the scallop goes all the way up, so you don't bang your head on it as you go past. Which for those of us who are, I'm 6'3", 190 centimetres.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real concern for me sometimes. And that's really good. And of course, the whole cabin is just quieter as well. Partly because of the work that Embraer themselves have done, but also partly because of the new efficient Pratt & Whitney geared turbofan engines. And those were almost silent taking off. It was incredible. Even for those of us behind the wing.
Yeah. In actual fact, I did take a video on my iPhone of the takeoff, and I was behind the wing too on the port side. And I've posted it on Twitter, which we can talk about where you find it later. But anybody who looks me up will be able to look at that one and then compare it to a video I took when I was sat in front of the wing on the takeoff from Tromsø going back to Bergen on that first round trip of a commercial mm-hmm. service back in April. So, and they are incredibly quiet. In actual fact, one of the problems on the demo flight compared to the previous one. On the previous one, it was commercial. People were excited. They were chatting away. So you can hear all this, this chat going on in the background. Nothing from the engine, of course. It's just so quiet. Mm-hmm. The thing was on the Farnborough demo flight, they were all aviation journalists doing exactly the same thing. So everything was quiet in the cabin anyway. It was quite
funny.
Cool.
I was transcribing my interview, and one of the real problems with it was that there was another interview going on in two rows away, and I was hearing both interviews at the same time, which was very useful in fairness. But yeah, it's remarkable. And it's great to see this evolving from larger jets into smaller. I mean, 10 years ago, we were talking about the same thing with the A380. I mean, I remember when Lufthansa introduced their A380, the back half of upstairs was business class. So basically 100 sloping sleeper Recaro angle lie flat beds. And what you ended up with, because Lufthansa hadn't put any monuments in that cabin, right? What you ended up with was the best part of 100 German business travellers after a plate of Maultaschen and a couple of Weisspie, snoring their way to wherever they were going. And because there was no sound deadening and no one was used to needing to acoustically design cabins like that, it was the snoring express.
Yeah.
And so it's really interesting, 10 years later to see this going into smaller aircraft like the Airbus A220, formerly Bombardier AC series, which we'll talk about in a bit, into the E2, and it's fantastic.
Yeah,
it does bring its own sort of new sets of cabin interiors design challenges, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I think the other you mentioned that it gets so quiet that you certainly can't do any detailed business talk that you don't want anybody to hear, like you could in cabins of old, because you can almost
whispering into your business partner's ear.
you can hear it about three quarters of the way down the cabin at any normal speech level. So, but impressive aircraft. And it'll be interesting to see how they progress. But
yeah,
I know
they've certainly got a big order. Well, a big set of orders at this year's show.
Well, yes. Of course, the big bulk of that, the Republic MOU for 100 firm Embraer 175s with 100 options. Yeah, yeah, that's that was all E1 stuff. But mm-hmm. it's interesting that they still have the option, even on their firm orders. Usually it's a case of, oh yeah, we've got on the options, we've got the potential to switch. But this time, mm-hmm. even on the firm orders, there's the potential to switch to the E175 E2s in the contract. So yeah. You can see that they're preparing, hoping for a scope clause change. But yeah, it's a good number for them. And you mentioned Helvetic. That was a nice little order. I know it's only an LOI at the moment, but when Embraer and people stand up in front of things like that, they generally end up being firm orders. Yeah. So 12 E190 E2s, 12 purchase rights for Helvetic. Really good, really good little order there. And you never know. You might be on an E190 E2 into London City in a few years' time.
I'd be delighted. And just for a bit of background for those who aren't familiar with the scope clause situation, that's a United States specific restriction on the number size, number cabin size in terms of number of passengers and weight of regional aircraft that are being operated for other airlines. So it's the Republic operating for
everyone.
Yeah, pretty much everyone.
Yeah, they do. They do American. They do Delta. They do United.
Yeah, it's your American Eagle, Delta Connection, United Express kind of.
Absolutely.
Which you know is great. I was watching our friend Jonathan Koo on Twitter, looking at a flight. And it was like Chicago to the US West Coast, which is the best part of four and a half hours. Mm. And it was on an E-175. And he was like, oh God, I don't want to fly on a tiny plane like that. And literally all of our friends who were, you know, who either work in industry or you know, well-informed aficionados, were like, no, that is possibly the best way to get transcontinental, because you've got, you know, they've got two seating, big wide seats, big windows, and frankly, not a lot of people on the plane.
Yeah, a few years ago, we did on the way back from the Regional Airline Association annual convention in Minneapolis. We flew Minneapolis to Newark on a 175, which was operated by Republic. And my colleague said it was the best flight she'd ever been on. It was so comfortable. She was a bit tired. She nodded off, but she said it was so smooth and the cabin was so lovely. So yeah, they've got a lot of fans over in the States, obviously. Yeah. But I must say I look forward to the E2 looking at the premium cabin, because although the demo aircraft didn't have any sign of it on, you and I have both seen the staggered seat situation in the mock-ups of the past, and that's going to be interesting when they put it on the aircraft. I'm hoping it gets on a demo aircraft fairly soon.
Well, and you know, Bernie, it will. This is the staggered cabin that won the 2015 Crystal Cabin Award under the Industrial Design and Visionary Concepts section. And it's a staggered 2-2 configuration with a pitch of around 52 inches. And I was talking to Daniel Gallardo Gomez of Embraer, mm-hmm. who whipped out his phone and showed me some WhatsApp pictures of those staggered seats just rolling off the production line, you know, on pallets and ready to be installed in things.
Oh, right.
So that's fantastic. Of course, Kuwait's Watania Airways had an order for those, including the staggers up front.
Yes.
It's great to see that. It's great to see more innovation at the pointy end of these smaller jets.
Well, yeah. The thing being, that staggered seat looks to be a win-win for both the airline and the passenger, because you've got space for the passenger to whatever pitch the airline wishes to offer. Obviously, that's their choice. But you've also got the flexibility for the airline, with the seat rails and the passenger service units not needing to be hauled out. They can just slide them up and down and reconfigure. And say they want to just halve the amount of business seats, at any one time in the program, moving from a summer program to a winter program or whatever, it's not going to be a really big job in terms of pulling out seats, and they just slide them around, put some more economy seats in, and there you go. Mm. It's a win-win, as I say. And so, but well done, well done, Watania, for being the first customer to actually stand up and say we are going to take these. So we'll look forward to doing that on their 195 E2s.
Indeed. Staying in the regional space and the premium end of smaller aircraft, Bombardier brought its latest CRJ, which is the new Atmosphere cabin.
Mustn't forget that grave accent there. Absolutely.
Otherwise, you don't know it's French Canadian. I thought that was very interesting. My take on it was, and I wrote this for my upfront column on Runway Girl Network. Lovely new cabin. Shame about those old Delta seats, which are exactly the same Delta seats we've been seeing for ages. The cabin itself is brilliant. It's spacious. Again, we've got these new bigger bins that you can actually put in some ways. You can put the big wheelie bags in wheels first. That's up front in the sort of business or first class cabin, depending on where you are, which is a 1-2 configuration.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they've moved the aisle over, so it's closer to the one, and they've taken out the overhead bin from the one and instead made a bigger bin over the two. And that means that in the premium cabin, you can get the bin, the
roller bags
in the bin, wheels first.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. Now, further back, you can put the same size bag in sideways, which is again an improvement. My home airport here, Lyon, is infested with CRJs, you always have to check anything larger than a handbag.
Mm.
And so it's fantastic to see that that's actually going to be an option for people.
Yeah. With no re-engineering on the CRJ being planned, Bombardier really had to respond to the competition because we've just spoken about even the Embraers have got the E1s had bigger bins, but with the E2 coming in, Bombardier really had to respond. Especially as sales of the CRJs has really only been coming through for one model ahead of everything else, and that's the CRJ 900, which Delta are taking, of course. But on the interior, everyone I spoke to after they'd been spent time on board was thoroughly impressed with the way in which the real estate had been used. You know, it's not a new. There's no extra space in. Well, there's no extra overall tube space, so making better use of it. Most people have applauded that really well. So it's
including options for a new larger lavatory for passengers with reduced mobility, which is a fantastic option up there.
Important.
You end up in a situation with you're flying on these new 737s with the new mini lavs, and there's no way someone who has mobility restrictions can use those. So it's great to see regional jets leading the way here, and hopefully that will flow upwards, as it were, into the main line. That it is important.
It's extremely important. Look at what happened with the 2012 London Paralympics. I know there's more people who are who have reduced mobility than those who end up being great athletes, but it brought a different appreciation, a different level of recognition of what people have to go through to travel. You've got international athletes of various stages of reduced mobility having to travel into London, and it's happening more and more, and that people are really realizing that you cannot just leave a couple of seats up front and do a little thing to help them on board. You've got to help them be equal, simple.
Yeah,
equal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's very important indeed. And I think Bombardier, Embraer, Bombardier / Airbus, they with the A220, they've done a fantastic job in thinking about these things on the the PRM lavatories. And I really
and designing it into the cabin from the first point.
Absolutely,
which I think that's the key.
Yeah.
And absolutely, they're to be applauded for that. Moving on to the A220, the artist formerly known as the Bombardier C series. Do you know, it was the strangest cognitive disconnect walking up to the, to that plane, which, you know, I've flown on a lot of the C series. I've covered it a lot as the C series. To see it in that Airbus house livery, very strange, Bernie. I don't know about you.
I've got to admit, I kind of glanced towards it as I was just coming out of the halls and heading down to one of the pavilions across the front end of the site. And I kind of glanced across and, that's an Airbus tail with Airbus house livery. And I didn't think twice. And only as hang on a minute. That's the A220. I had to do a double take. It was only kind of as I got head on and recognised the shape, because it is a beautiful looking aircraft. It really
fantastic.
Is. And a lovely front on, and the wings are just fantastic. Yeah. So,
and a great cabin, of course.
Oh, you know,
I mean that those 18-inch wide seats and the window and aisle, and that 19-inch wide middle seat.
Well,
it's great.
Well, this is it. A bit of thought, you know. It doesn't take too much when you and of course they were when it came about, they were designing from the clean sheet, and I've always thought it would be a really good aircraft, and of course nobody said it isn't a good aircraft, but there's just been this thing about will we invest in it? It's totally brand new. Brand new technology, new materials, new engines, of course. So it's lovely to see it going to be pushed like it really should be. And of course, you know, we got the JetBlue order just before Farnborough, and the Project Moxie at Farnborough swelling the commitments by 240, which, you know, that's quite a jump.
Absolutely, you know, and look, two orders from airlines founded by David Neeleman, who has something of a Midas touch with airlines, is that's a really good recommendation for the product, isn't it?
It is. I'm intrigued about the Project Moxie that Mr. Neeleman is working on, because, you know, setting up an airline based on the A220-300, really, really interesting. And although it's due to start in 2021, it makes you wonder what somebody like Southwest, which still has a large number of 737-700s, and is due to take a modest amount of 737 MAX 7s, it makes you wonder how much attention they will be paying to this new project of Mr. Neeleman. It's an interesting one, because and then of course what are the majors going to think about this? Because they recognise that there is a position in their fleet. Delta, of course, has gone there already with CS100. A220-100s. How will they respond? It's going to be really interesting. Of course, the other thing is, we need to find out, as soon as we can, any one of us, what sort of configuration, Moxie's going to put the, 220-300s in, a front end cabin, the economy pitch and things like that. It's going to be very, very interesting, because, he's done well with Azul. He's done well with JetBlue. He was even involved in setting up WestJet all those years ago, and they're still doing quite nicely. Yeah. But
revitalizing TAP Air Portugal as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But Airbus, like Bombardier before, did have the benefit of Farnborough, of a customer who has the customer aircraft was there with the airline CEO and other execs in the shape of Air Baltic speaking glowingly about the Dash 300. And Air Baltic's own order book for the aircraft just keeps growing. They're looking to just have a complete fleet of those, not even do the 100 to go into smaller places, in and around the Scandinavian countries. So, very confident in it there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and all power to them. You know, the three Baltic states have had trouble getting and keeping airlines. So it's great to see a Baltic going from strength to strength.
Mm.
Really innovative little carrier. And you know, it gets a lot of press for its size, and I think that's good news for the A220, and good news for the program.
Absolutely, bless Martin Gauss. He's a very good salesman, yeah, for the aircraft itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Now turning to our last regional jet, the MRJ, our plucky little aircraft, another beautiful looking aircraft.
Indeed,
you know, so it's pointy. It's
it's very really sleek, isn't it?
It is. Which, of course, had a little bit of a ding at the air show. After the first day of flying, a pushback truck dinged the radome, and so they had to cancel their second day of flying. But they told me that they repaired the radome, which is, of course, a bit of a... always a plus to say, yes, look how robust our aircraft is, and got it flying.
Yeah.
And for me, I like the aircraft. It's been delayed, obviously. They need to do some more work on the cabin, because the cabin is now a few years out of date. But it's another Pax X positive in this 70 to 90 seater market for me. You know, a spacious 2-2 cabin, roughly the size of the Embraer. You know, it's got larger bins and so on. And it's great to see that, you know, in their program update from Alex Bellamy and Hugo Fukuhara, they were, you know, saying that they're getting back on track with the program. You know, they're resourcing themselves up and they're looking up new orders, but it'll be good to see that little plane flying for someone.
Yeah, it was nice also to see the one of the major top executives from ANA come over and give it some support as well, as because, you know, they're going to be putting it into service in a couple of years' time as launch customer.
Yeah,
but that ramp ding was so unfortunate for them. It's taken so long to get it to into a major airshow flying display, and then to have that after your first flight, you just can't legislate for that.
But, no, you can't.
On the interior, I agree with you. They've worked very hard from the start to make it quiet inside and out. And we've all seen the mock-ups over the years, the strong efforts they've put into making it a very comfortable cabin. As you say, they might, because of the delays, they might need to tweak that. But they've a little bit of time to do that. Not too much, but it should come out okay. And although it's not entering service for another couple of years, they do need to start with demo flights as soon as possible, because and in particular at next year's Paris Air Show, because there's nothing that convinces people more than actually getting on the thing and really getting a feel for it. It's I applaud them for you said plucky earlier. They really believe in it. It's going to be late, but I think it's going to be a good quality aircraft. And I was interested also, you mentioned Alex Bellamy and Hugo Fukuhara in their presentations. There was a lot more chat about the MRJ-72 as well. It isn't an MRJ-72, it's an MRJ-70 as well. This is going to be crucial for them, because in the US, again, there's this scope clause. And if the MRJ-90 and the Embraer 175E2 get locked out, not because of the number of seats they have, but because of their weight, by the scope clause of the major airlines, then the fleet competitions in the early part of the next decade, when what's left of the 50-seaters are moved on from US regional fleets and carriers, which are looking to upsize, there will ostensibly be the CRJ-900, and that this year celebrated 15 years since its first delivery in February 2003, and there'll be that against the MRJ-70. Now, different generations, and you'd have to say, if you were looking at it, you'd got to say the MRJ-70 would be in a good position there. So it's going to be crucial for them to follow up the MRJ-90 entry into service with as quick as they can, get that MRJ-70 out there as well. So, yeah, interesting program. I hope they do well. I mean, we all these programs, there's a lot of very, very fine people in the background working so hard to deliver a quality aeroplane. We sometimes forget that.
Oh, absolutely. And yet, you know, MRJ is one of those really interesting Interesting programs, interesting organizations. I got into their Nagoya facility a couple of years ago, and it was really, really great to see them sort of, starting to open up and engage with international media and sort of really sort of begin to understand how that part of the industry works. Mm.
I believe they're thinking of inviting media again this autumn to see the production lines and things.
Yeah.
So that I hope I could make that.
Yeah, well, hey, do hit me up for Nagoya recommendations. It's one of my favourite cities. Someone once said it was the most boring city in Japan, and I could not disagree more. It's one of my faves. It's there's some great museums there. There are some fantastic gardens. It's on a rail crossroads, and the food scene is amazing. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, I've had 48 hours there. That's it. That was for the rollout.
Yeah. Let's go slightly larger with the A330neo. This was the first time I was in the cabin of the TAP Air Portugal flying test bed, as it were. It's the one that's been doing the route proving tours. The cabin looks great. I learned that Airbus are, after introducing the business class cabin, the new Recaro CL6710s, they're actually going to be taking all the ones from the route proving out and putting in newer models, because this won't be the first aircraft delivered to TAP Air Portugal.
Oh right,
it'll be the second or third or something. Mm-hmm. Because they want to spruce up the cabin. They want to make sure that it's the same quality as the later models.
Yeah.
But from a passenger experience viewpoint, of course, that's a really interesting way to do it. Because whenever there's a new seat, the first few models are always a bit rickety. Or more than the first few in some well-publicised recent cases, but it's very helpful, I think, for the airline and for the airframe to say, oh no, we know these ones are a bit duff, we'll be taking them off and putting them back on, right? It avoids a little bit of the frankly well-deserved criticism for the seats not quite winning the universal acclaim that perhaps everybody hoped.
Yeah.
And again, that airspace cabin looks great. It's that whole bigger bins that are higher up, more out of your head, revamped overheads, and new cabins, new windows.
It's very interesting that all these cabins that have put bigger bins in, they've the Embraer, the Airbus, they've managed to maintain the natural light by bringing in the bigger windows. So they've taken some space in terms of putting the bigger bin in, and yet you still feel that it's a nice light cabin that feels relaxing. You don't feel as though this change of size in the bin has encroached into your personal space as much. And I think that's great design by all the teams on all the programs. Yeah, I think absolutely. Very well done.
And in fact, the interesting thing about the A330neo is they haven't really changed the size of the window at all. They just changed the size of the framing around it. So it's just that perception that the window is bigger, and the fact that there's less shrouding around it, so it does let in more light.
Mm.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's
an aircraft that's... I've always liked. Clearly, there's been engine problems, but its predecessor has been a solid seller over 25 years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they did pick up the additional 34 orders from AirAsia X, so they can't have been too happy with. Can't have been too unhappy with that.
Well, and Airbus was, AirAsia was playing A versus B there, and saying they might end up taking some 787s, and we quizzed the executives from AirAsia X quite strongly on that, and it was obviously a bit of a corporate not corporate game playing, but it's just how the game's played.
Yes, absolutely.
That's great. It's great to see the A330neo. Obviously, that's something that's going to be. There's a big set of A330 current generation, the A330 COs, that will need to be replaced because those aircraft are getting on in years.
Absolutely.
It's great. That's another PAX X positive, right?
Yeah. I think
8 abreast cabin for most people. Obviously, AirAsia will be the high density 9 abreast with its mirror seating.
It'll be interesting to see what they do on that a little bit, because particularly if there's talk, because there has been talk about. The AirAsia X returning to Europe because with the slightly longer range of the 330neo, and if you come in that sort of distance, I wonder how well they'll you know, what sort of seating they'll have for that, if they're going to still stick with what they have, shall we say, within their 8-hour radius of their in their home market, which they've been flying. That's the, you know, the bulk of their flying, but the longer ones, yeah. I wonder if they'll have anything slightly different when if they're returning to Europe. I say return to Europe, I hasten to say not to the UK, because we might not even have a flight agreement with Malaysia by that time. It breaks the breath of Brexit taking us away from that. You just never know.
Well, exactly. And then also, of course, in Southeast Asia, those ex-Singapore Airlines A380s, the first one to go to Highfly, landed with its beautiful livery, raising awareness for the coral reefs.
Absolutely.
And this is the Highfly, the Portuguese wet lease specialist, which just after the show announced that it had placed that aircraft with its first customer, which will be, and I quote, an undisclosed, well-established European carrier.
Hmm.
Watch this space for exactly who.
I haven't a clue who that might be, I've got to admit.
Well, I talked to their CEO, Paolo Mirpuri, about this, and the plan is basically, he's got one of two markets. One is an airline that wants to boost capacity over peak periods, like the Northern Hemisphere summer, and the other one is an airline that wants to that needs to replace one A380 at a time while it goes through its maintenance cycles.
Absolutely.
The former obviously is a little bit easier of a sell. The second one, the problem is that these seats, these aircraft are, you know, that Singapore Airlines spec is excellent and better than most A380s operated by most other airlines. So it will be one that if you can figure out how to book it, if it's replacing something else on your airline, you probably want to. It's got those Singapore Airlines first generation suites, which are still a delightful first-class product, among the best in the sky. Business class, it's got, well, for the next couple of years at least, it's got those Koito fully flat beds, which are, of course, they're covered by the special arrangements under the Airworthiness Directive after disgraced seatmaker Koito, as we now call it, was caught falsifying its safety data.
Yeah.
But that exemption for that one particular seat runs out in a couple of years, so they'll need to put something else on there.
Yeah. I did fly the A380 with Singapore Airlines in economy, but perfectly fine flight. A lovely aircraft for, you know, in terms of an economy passenger experience.
Yeah.
And but in all honesty, I've never had a poor experience flying with Singapore Airlines.
No, that they have that reputation, don't they? I agree with you. There's been a couple of the regional seats which I've not been a huge fan of.
Mm.
But the airline is, you know, on the whole an excellent operator.
Just going back to Highfly, so though, I think it's going to be interesting to see. You mentioned various carriers wanting to have some extra capacity at certain times of the year. It'd be interesting to see how, if they yo-yo between the Northern Hemisphere summer and the Southern Hemisphere summer. Because, I mean, some aircraft do that already. You know, they get wet leased into Europe, and then they're suddenly down in South America or in Australasia. And it'll be interesting to see how this works.
Transavia 737s flitting all over the place and popping up in places you don't expect.
That's right. So I wish them well with it, because it's taking on a real challenge. But they obviously believe in the product that they'll bring. And I think, like you say, the configuration, the old SQ, is a good one to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, I think that's it for today's conversation. We certainly hope you enjoyed it, listeners, and we're always keen to find out what you think. Please feel free to email me at john@runwaygirlnetwork.com with any suggestions. Thanks to our guest too, Bernie Baldwin. Bernie, where can our listeners find you?
Oh, very simple. On Twitter, my handle is @BernieBaldwin, all one string. I'm on LinkedIn, just under my own name there. And I can be emailed at bernie@baldwineditorial.com.
Super. And as ever, you can find me on Twitter @thatjohn, everything from RGN on Twitter @runwaygirl, and of course @runwaygirlnetwork.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, listeners, please do leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you for listening.